Two verses from the New Testament, from one each from each of two Gospels. From Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5, during Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, not a half-bad role model for preachers, right after the recitation of the Beatitudes, he says, "You are the light of the world. Let your light so shine before others that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." And then from John's Gospel, chapter 1, which is John's allegorical version of the Christmas story, where he says, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Let your light so shine before others, the light shines in the darkness loses." So he says. This is the time of the year I always get a little pensive about the notion of light and dark. The fall equinox is this week, and that means that ever since the summer solstice, the days have been getting shorter. The light and the dark has been getting closer together. But next week, each day will have a minute or so more dark than light. The darkness starts to prevail. And that will be true until right about Christmas, and then it will cycle again. Well, presumably. Always has been, but you never know. But I always wonder a little bit about, and the ancients were very fearful of their insight that the darkness was beginning to win. And from time to time, it feels that way. We have more darkness than light in our lives, and there is reality to that for the next 3 or 4 months. And then I remember this truism: it's better to light one small candle than to curse the darkness. Okay, let's talk about small candles today. It is very common, especially at worship, and I think it's especially appropriate that this be true during worship. The churches light candles, sometimes elaborate candelabras, sometimes just a single, what's sometimes called a paschal candle or a Christ candle, is lit and placed somewhere in the chancel. Or, in the case of this church, you've got candlelight streaming through the stained glass window and coming in from the side. God lights God's own candles in this church, and that's fine by me. But the imagery is intriguing. For candlelight, or light diffused into our worship, energizes, enlightens, and illuminates the work of the people. The word liturgy, which is what we conduct at worship, means people's work, illuminated by one small candle. It is not trivial to note in this context that culture only exists, that human culture only exists because we figured out how to light things on fire. Cooking, warmth, light, energy, I mean, flipping a switch to illuminate the room is reflective of humans' invention of fire. So the question is, what is the people's work? What does one small candle, literally or metaphorically, energize us to do? What is it? What light does it shine on our work together? Let your light so shine before others that they may see your good works. Well, there's lots of good work that gets done by folks. There is even good work that's used for nefarious purposes, like identity theft and computer crime and all of that. But how do you distinguish good work from work, or good work that's been misappropriated? All of us have skills. All of us fit into our world, our families, our church. But what transcends that is what I think is the ultimate good work. And I say this because this is an acquired taste for me, and I'm not especially good at it. A characteristic brought to any activity that includes patience. There's a reason why I say that. We had a smartphone break this week, and apparently that's not an uncommon occurrence. Went to the AT&T place where we bought the thing and was directed to the Mac store at the mall. And there's a service counter at the Mac store at the mall that is never empty. You got to wait in line. So, okay. The miracle in this story is that the smartphone broke 2 weeks before the warranty expired instead of 2 weeks beyond. That blessing aside, I'm not good at waiting in lines. especially when the people ahead of me in lines are seemingly asking stupid questions to me, taking up more time from the clerk than they deserve, and don't they know how busy I am? Excuse me, I have credentials. It is good for me. It is vital for my humanity that I take a breath and note without any equivocation that the service tech is being uncommonly patient with really annoying people. And unless I dial it back a little bit, I'm going to be the next really annoying person. So I decided to react in kind to the way the people ahead of me were being treated by someone who was doing very good work. I thought, what have I got to do right now anyway? I had another phone. I could play words. So I did. Checked CNN, looked at the stock market. Patience. And patience is really the opposite of entitlement. And that's where we get into trouble. That's where everybody gets into trouble. Don't they know who I am? As though that makes you categorically different from anybody else when it's time to wait in line and get something fixed. Or where it's time to simply fit into a larger community where you belong. And when you dial back the entitlement and dial up the patience, you recognize that we're all in this together. Which is why, typically, there's just a few candles at worship, because that's enough light to give us the idea that we're all in this together. Let your good works reflect God's love for everyone with just a little bit of patience, because in fact, God knows precisely who you are and considers you precious. Of course, he considers the people ahead of you in line equally precious. Don't forget that part either. Which leads me to another small candle that I think is illustrative on this point. We often use a candle at worship at baptism to take a baptismal candle and light it in the middle of the event that brings someone into our fellowship. And that baptismal candle is usually lit and presented to the family with those words from Matthew's Gospel, "Let your light so shine." And it is done at baptism because baptism is what gives us our identity. We are named, as it were, in the name of the one who calls us, blesses us, and inspires us. And the crucial point here, and the candle gives us this insight, that name never changes. That sense of belonging cannot be subverted. The things that you do, fail to do, or can't prevent do not change your name or your status as one who God has chosen to live, love, and work in God's world. Unfortunately, that gets lost on us from time to time, in often sadly tragic ways, that we lose sight of the fact that even though we don't feel we belong because of something we've done, God's love transcends it every single time. And that small candle is the light of insight on how that goes. I'm working on a research piece that I'm going to present at a meeting in California next month called The Hypocrisy Factor. Now, that's a sort of theological way of what psychologists call cognitive dissonance. And it's what it is that people have to live with when, to put it bluntly, their creeds and their deeds don't quite match up. We've got a data set where we have survey responses from students, and I'm just looking at two samples now, one from Texas Tech and one from Baylor. And the Baylor students and the Tech students are almost identical in their religiousness. They are equally more or less likely to say their religious faith is very strong or strong. They're also more or less equally likely to say they believe the Bible is the inerrant word of God. So they have very strong and very strident, even we might say conservative religious beliefs, and they're very much the same. What's different are the differences in the rates at which Tech versus Baylor students binge drink, use illegal drugs, have multiple sex partners, and most profoundly, report that they have attempted suicide in their lives. The attempted suicide rate between Tech and Baylor is 2 to 1. It's with the, there's a 6% report at Baylor and a 12% report at Tech. It's twice as high. I found that stunning. What we're teasing out is, does that have anything to do with the idea that very religious students come to a secular university and start behaving in ways that they know are at odds with their faith and maybe can't live with it? I find that tragic if it's true. And we may not be able to demonstrate definitively in our body of survey respondent data, but there was a desperately tragic and sad story in the news this last week of a very prominent minister and religion professor from Louisiana who ended his own life because he'd wound up on a salacious website. You know. Now, there are temporal consequences to moral failure, and we have to live with that, and we have to, in some sense, work through it. But theologically and biblically, we are not alone, and the light never goes out. God's promise through the promises of baptism and vocation, and even more profoundly through John's proclamation at the birth of Jesus, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness loses. It's tragic, in my view, that lives end, or that maybe young people seek to end their lives, when they feel they can't live up to who they think they need to be. Because that's what God's presence and spiritual love and light is designed to produce. One small candle lit for you at baptism never goes out. And I think it's our job to keep reminding and holding on to the fact that nothing we've ever done or ever will do, fail to do or can't prevent, changes who we are fundamentally before the Lord who loves us even still. Which does not say our lives will not be difficult and that some of the things we have to make amends for with regard to our own behavior or moral failings are not consequential, but they're not ultimate. One small candle doesn't change who you are, no matter what you do. Thirdly, more transcendent. I ask my students from time to time, usually right on the run-up to Christmas, how many of you expect to wind up at a worship service at which point, near the end, they will dim the lights, play Silent Night, and people will light little candles just like this. It's a very emotional and evocative experience. People report, after having done this, that they feel connected again in the room with people they've lost. People that couldn't make the trip to be with them. But there's a spiritual connection with one small candle. And it is perhaps most profoundly the case that we can bring reality to the idea that as we dim the lights and light the small candles and sing that amazing hymn, that the darkness loses. The light shines in the darkness most profoundly there, and connects us in ways that go beyond even the scope of just this life. I've had several people tell me that they save these things and that they become more profoundly valuable and precious to them after someone with whom they have lit them in worship is no longer with them. They remind themselves. They can just light the candle. They can light it in the middle of April if they want. And the feelings come back. Acknowledging the reality that once Labor Day passes, the Christmas stuff is now available in Walmart and pretty much everywhere else, I brought one small candle today for everyone. These are the candles that actually have three Christmases in them, and I have finally negotiated with the powers that be that this Christmas we got to get new ones. So let's make good use of what has been an enlightening experience and object for at least three Christmases, but really forever, since John made the proclamation. And you can light these, I don't know, in a week or two if you need to or if you want to. Need a little bit of light, a little bit of warmth, a little bit of hope, a little bit of peace. This light can shine in the darkness of whatever you've done, failed to do, or couldn't prevent. This light shines into the darkness of your own entitlement and brings you peace. It shines into whatever you need it to be. And the darkness loses all the time.